debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Friday. And so how about Middays with Mark? Congressman Mark Pocan on for the hour, taking your calls, brilliantly representing the 2nd District of Wisconsin. He's also the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You can find his website, Pocan, P-O-C-A-N, .house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep, R-E-P, Mark Pocan, M-E-R-K, Pocan, P-O-C-A-N. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here. Quite a week.
Indeed. And I don't know if you caught the news. I mean, literally broke in the last 4 minutes. Sean Spicer just resigned in protest over the appointment of Anthony Scaramucci as the White House Communications Director.
I think there are a lot of people at Saturday Night Live right now who are very, very sad.
Yeah, Melissa McCarthy just lost
McCarthy,
a gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange. It's very, very strange. So, you know, I saw this story yesterday. The first one I saw was on Huffington Post about how it was an analysis of the New York Times interview and how Trump said, well, you know, you pay $12 a year for insurance starting when you get right out of college. And you pay that $12 a year until you're 70, and by then you actually have some insurance. And I thought, that's weird. And then it turns out that back in May, in an interview with The Economist, he said the exact same thing, except it was $15 a month rather than $12 a year. What the heck is going on? Does this guy, not understand the difference between the term life insurance he sees advertised on Fox News and how health insurance works? And is this a problem that goes beyond the president? Does the entire Republican caucus not understand how health insurance works?
Well, you know, Tom, I'll tell you got to remember, and I'm not saying that if you're a wealthy person, you can't relate to other people. But, you know, over half of Congress are millionaires. You know, look at Daryl Issa and some of these other folks who are multi-millionaires.
Oh, he's worth like $900 million, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, so to them, 12 15, 1,000, it's all kind of the same, right? It just doesn't, it's not a lot of money. And to those of the rest of us, we were kind of shocked to see that. I mean, that interview in and of itself, I had retweeted something, I'm forgetting the exact words they used, but basically they were comparing it to someone who like just took a hit of acid as he gave the interview because he rambled in so many different areas and it was such a bizarre interview. But to show that disconnect as they are taking away health care from, under one of the most recent proposals, now 32 million people in this country, they just don't get it. They really don't get what real people care about, which is why, you know, when I look at my neighboring district, you know, Paul Ryan's district, he's gone very Washington, clearly these days as speaker. You know, you got a guy like Randy Bryce, who is an iron worker, who's running, and he can talk about stuff. You know, he said, let's trade jobs. I mean, let's make people understand what you actually pay out of your copay and what the actual insurance costs per month. Let's make them understand the basic economics of what people talk about at their kitchen table. You know, can you afford your mortgage? Can you have health insurance for your family? Can you send your kids to college if they want to go? And can you take a family vacation? That's what real people think about, not what people like Donald Trump and I think the Republican majority thinks about.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary. And in fact, Paul Ryan, you mentioned Paul Ryan, sometime in the recent past, I don't have the article in front of me here. I was riffing off it yesterday. Sometime in the recent past, Paul Ryan made the comment that, you know, you can't have a sustainable system where healthy young people are paying for sicker old people. And I thought that was the whole point of health insurance. We pay into it our whole lives, and so that when we need it, it's there.
But you got to remember, Tom, when I first was running for Congress, this is now going back about 5 years, maybe five and a half, it was the same week that he was seen out having two $350 bottles of wine with a couple lobbyists for dinner. And
I remember that.
Yeah, remember that? That was the week I happened to be out there when I was running. When people can drink multiple bottles of $350 bottle of wine, you aren't in touch anymore with real people.
Yeah. Well, and that was as I recall, dinner with a couple of lobbyists at a fancy schmancy restaurant here in Washington, D.C. So, so there's that and this whole healthcare thing. We're talking, by the way, with Congressman Mark Pocan today. It's Middays with Mark. He will be taking your calls as soon as I'm done interrogating him. If you'd like to ask a question of Congressman Pocan, give us a call. Give him a call at 202-808-9925. Your opportunity to talk to a member of Congress and one of the very best. Congressman Jeff Sessions has instructed the nation's police to ramp back up civil asset forfeiture, at least the federal agencies, after President Obama put a stop to it. In 2015, the federal authorities in the United States seized over $3.2 billion worth of cash and assets from Americans who were never convicted of crimes. And that amount is more than all the burglars in the country stole that year. This is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, and the way they did a lot of this was to get around state laws that actually were stricter so they could bump things to federal court so they could actually take some of the things that they took from people, again, without any conviction. So the fact that Jeff Sessions in this Department of Justice is overturning the changes that were made by the Obama administration to get rid of that is pretty amazing. Even more amazing, I think, is the fact that, you know, the president talked about saying he never would have made Jeff Sessions the AG if he knew he was going to recuse himself on Russia, right? So the Department of Justice was big in the news also this week on multiple fronts that, again, just show that complete disconnect with reality that this White House has.
Yeah, it's really, really extraordinary. And the whole civil asset forfeiture thing, it's so wrong. I don't know how we got on that road, where it started, or I think it came along with Nixon's war on drugs. But what a non, you know, small D democracy, democratic thing. Anyhow,
Congressman, you expect of America.
Indeed. Congressman Mark Pocan is with us. Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman program. And he is taking your call right after this break. Congressman Pocan represents the 2nd District of Wisconsin. He's also the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And is the website, pocan.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark, M-A-R-K, Pocan, P-O-C, for the record. And welcome back. George in Santee, California, watching us on Free Speech TV. George, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Thank you, Tom, and good day to you and Congressman Pocan. Mr. Pocan, I would like to know your position on our foreign policy in the Middle East.
Sure, George, it's a little broad. There's a lot of things there. I think in general, let me say this, and I think this is probably true of many of us in the Progressive Caucus, George. We would like to see a bit more of a scaled-back Defense Department where we're not taking the lead in every single action wherever it is on the globe, especially in the Middle East. It seems that you know, we, from our past experiences there, we don't know the region nearly as well as people in the region do. And while I think when there is a need for us to be involved, we can provide essential backup to people in the region. I think our past experience of trying to lead in this area has not proven wise, whether it be Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, clearly a lot of the efforts in Syria have not gone well, and it's a huge amount of cost, both in human terms and dollars. So, you know, I wish we had a bit more of a focus on diplomacy across the board, even with some people that maybe haven't always been our diplomatic partners, before we just automatically jump to defense methods. And if you look at this current budget and the appropriations bills that we just passed in the last couple of weeks, and it'll be on the floor in the House next week, there's a huge increase going into defense, and it's not that it's going to the people who actually serve us in the military. It's often going to military contractors and a lot of things I think are just going to cost us far more down the road.
Okay. Dion in Round Lake, Illinois. Dion, you're on the, watch this on YouTube. Dion, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yeah, Trump had a luncheon with Republicans, I believe, on Wednesday, and he said that President Obama lied 20 times about Obamacare, but he's saying that if we go to single payer, but the Democrats won, we will go bankrupt. Is that true? And how did we go to single payer without going bankrupt? And do you think this is another lie of Trump?
Yeah, you know, I think I heard last night, and I'm not sure if I even fact-checked this myself, but I heard in the first 6 months he's been president, not only have we done virtually nothing in Congress, he's made statements that he signed more bills than any president, and he's down the list quite a bit. What I heard is he did 991 tweets, and most of those fall probably in the either, you know, odd information or misinformation categories more than often. You know, when he says, you know, things about like that about single payer or anyone says that, they're just wrong. I mean, you know, Canada, Europe, you can look across the globe and see, you know, where this works extremely well. You know, the problem is you're going to disrupt a very big, significant, you know, one out of every $6 in the economy when you talk about healthcare. And if you actually talk about a big concept like Medicare for All, single payer, a lot of people get their backs riled. And I think that's why you see people either slow to sometimes come on board, even though I think it makes complete logical sense to go that path, or you'll see a lot of resistance because they're supporting the special interests, whether it be the insurance companies or others, rather than supporting the American people. So outright lie. Many articles are out there showing just the opposite. I think that's our aspirational place to get to. But right now, what we're saying is, let's just fix the Affordable Care Act. 20 million people now have access to health insurance who didn't before. Things like pre-existing conditions, now you can get coverage. You don't have a lifetime cap. Women are paying the same as men. Let's keep all that good stuff, and let's just fix the areas that need to be fixed. And let's, you know, do something about healthcare and not about tax breaks for the wealthy.
Well said. Congressman Mark Pocan on the line with us, taking your calls for the hour. And Ayat in Cleveland, Ohio. You are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good afternoon, Tom. I would like to ask the congressman about this bipartisan bill that is going through, trying to pass through the Congress and the Senate, trying to criminalize people that are involved with the DBS, and I mean, they said it's up to a million dollar fine and 20 years in prison.
Right. Are you familiar with this, Congressman?
Yeah. There was just an article that sparked this week. I haven't seen it like moving, unless again this week I spent hours and hours and hours till midnight several nights doing markup for appropriations. But this is the bill trying to ban any attempts at doing the BDS movement, dealing with obviously Palestine and Israel. And I don't know if it's something that they're going to push next week. We have been told in the House there could be some sanction bills that may come up. This was not on the list that I saw. I think I saw something in the article this week. The Senate might have had either a committee took it up or it was just an article about it. But I don't know, Ayat, that there's movement on the bill at this time. But I did see an article popped up this week, and I'm sorry I can't tell you more about what that article was. I just remember seeing it during the week.
Yeah, what I've read about it, and we discussed this some yesterday, is that apparently under this legislation, and I may be wrong on this, but this is what I've read in the press, because I haven't read the bill itself, which is very often almost impossible to do anyway. But even
under this legislation, from what I've read in the press, even arguing in a public forum in favor of the divestiture and the boycotting of Israel over Gaza and Palestine and whatnot, just simply advocating it, speaking out, could subject a person to 20 years in prison and $1 million in fines. And there's a bunch of good Democrats who are co-sponsors of this. I'm guessing that somehow this thing got dropped into a bunch of members of Congress's laps, you know, from a friendly pro-Israel source. And they just figured, oh, you know, it's some kind of nice pro-Israel thing. Yeah, throw my name on it. And they didn't realize what it is. And this blowback is just going to freak everybody out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, this is one of those issues, Tom. You know, I've been taking a lot of heat lately from some of the extreme right, so-called pro-Israel groups who have really a very, very political agenda, because I've sponsored things like working with the Quakers when they wanted a meeting room to talk about the plight of Palestinian youth. You know, I've been to the region as recent as a year ago, and you know, I can tell you, we need to have peace in that region, but you need to have the conversations that have to go on. And when you continue to expand settlements illegally, that runs against everything. When I was there several years ago, we had just started the peace process again. It makes it harder to get to that place. And, you know, I think a lot of the rhetoric that's out there, when I talk to the average Israeli or the average Palestinian, they don't abide by that rhetoric. It's kind of the government leaders like Netanyahu and some very, very partisan folks who fall in that extremist trap. Real people on the ground just want to see peace in the region, but we've got to get those conversations restarted. You can't continue to expand settlements. You know, they've had some pretty serious prosecutorial actions against some players in Palestine that have violated, many of us think, civil rights, and we're just concerned that the efforts going on right now aren't leading to a peaceful solution. And I would argue, from my conversations there, if you want to fight ISIS, one of the best things we could possibly do to defeat ISIS is have a peaceful two-state settlement in the region, because if you do that, you take away one of the major talking points that ISIS uses to recruit people. So, you know, it's a very tough area. People get very hyper-political. Just like I said, just working with the Quakers alone got me attacked and called anti-Semitic and everything else in the world. It's a tough region, and people politically get very afraid because people try to scare you, and it's a tough area for people to really stand up and say, look, you know, no one's completely right on this, but we've got to get conversations that get us to a peaceful negotiation.
Amen. And it's the best thing for Israel's security, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think we all have said what we want is a two-state solution with the appropriate land swaps, right? I mean, that's kind of the from both the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. The problem is the actions going on now are going to make it harder and harder every single day to get that done. And that's why we've got to stop any actions that make it harder to get done. But let's get back to that point where we can have that true peace. And if you do that, you will have done more to defeat ISIS than dropping the mother of all bombs or anything else that we do.
Right. Amen. Paul, in Round Mountain, California, you are on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just was reading these articles about the Democratic, the DCCC.
Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee?
Right. Recruiting Blue Dog Democrats to recruit candidates for the 2018 election. These are people that are fiscally conservative. I think, I just wondered what Mr. Pocan's reaction is to this.
Sure. You know, Paul, and thanks for asking that, because I think, you know, at first when I saw the article, or the headline, I should say, I reacted. I'm like, what? What's going on? You know, this is crazy, because, you know, those are the more extreme elements of the Democratic Party. That certainly doesn't inspire the base. It certainly doesn't get people who don't traditionally vote out to vote. And when I read it more and looked into it a little more, you know, I think, honestly, this was more of an effort by the Blue Dogs to gain a little bit of muscle and show that they're doing something to try to help win back seats than anything that the DCCC is doing in an organized way, because I can also tell you the DCCC is organizing a lot of good progressives to run in some of these seats. And, you know, when you look at someone, again, like a Randy Bryce in running against Speaker Ryan, you've got someone that the Congressional Progressive Caucus just made its first endorsement this week of, and yet they're also working very closely with the DCCC. So, I think the misleading part is that I think the Blue Dogs wanted to get a little press to say, hey, look, we've got some muscle. We're not just in the teens of members versus the mid-70s that the Progressive Caucus has. And it's not so much about a reality of a shift in policy at the DCCC.
Yeah. Congressman, we just have 1 minute until we're going to hit the hard break at the bottom of the hour here. Not enough time to put a caller on. What are your thoughts on how the Democratic Party is strategizing going forward? And you know, any advice and suggestions for you know, our listeners about how they might participate and interact, things like that?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm really glad that my good friend Keith Ellison is now the deputy chair of the party, and I think if people take and listen to what Keith is saying, which is building the party through the grassroots and, you know, focusing more on getting people out to vote than just buying more ads on TV that consultants make a commission on, the better off we're going to be. But it really has to involve a lot of conversations now, not just at election time. And people can join their local Democratic parties, and if they don't like the direction they're going, they can run for leadership and take over those parties. So I think if we really focus on a grassroots party from the bottom up, which I think is what I see happening, because Tom Perez also, as someone who is, it was one of the more progressive secretaries under Barack Obama, we just have to make sure the party actually executes that and doesn't get sidetracked from people who may be in their finance divisions and realize that the grassroots power is what financed Bernie Sanders' campaign. There is power to supporting that grassroots effort, and that's how we win elections.
Amen. And Tom Perez was in the studio yesterday talking with us.
Awesome.
Seems like a good start, right? Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, and it's our Middays with Mark show. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. Congressman, you're back with us?
I am.
Okay, great. Bill in Campwood, Texas, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yeah, this is Bill in Campwood. Thanks for what, for all that y'all do. My complaint is that the DNC just doesn't do enough. Now, I know you might not be able to control that, but I believe they should, every time anybody mentions health care, it should be Medicare for all, and they should pound that, over and over again until it gets through. And you don't see him on TV much, a little bit. Tom had him on the other day, but Tom Perez I've seen occasionally on, but not very often. He needs to go out and get arrested if necessary to get attention. You know, we got to do something, because if we don't, they're going to keep the Senate and the House, I believe.
Congressman?
Yeah, I hear you, Bill. Thanks for your comments. So let me just say this. I think sometimes it's tough for the Democratic National Committee because they don't actually run campaigns. You have the Congressional Campaign Committee for Democrats, you have the Senatorial Committee, you have the individual campaigns themselves, you have the 527 groups. The party, really, their job is, in my opinion, more to provide the overall infrastructure to be in place and to have some of those broader general themes like you mentioned. But, they often get blamed for individual elections when, quite honestly, DNC is one of the last entities that actually is involved with each individual election. Now, having said that, I think, what you bring up about taking those big themes and getting out there and showing what Democrats in a big theme are, they can do that now throughout the time going up to the election, and then individual elections will take on their particular issues. But those top issues that, healthcare should be considered a right and everyone needs to have access to affordable health insurance, they should be very, very strong on. And I think they're trying that. It's just, as the DNC, sometimes, that's not where the media goes to first for comment. Now, on Medicare for All, if I can just add this, Tom, I think we need to know, I think we're up to now 115 people in the House who are supporting the Medicare for All bill that John Conyers has. It's an all-time high, and it's still increasing every week, and that's because people are out reaching out to their members of Congress and asking them to sign on to the bill, and Bernie Sanders has a similar bill in the Senate. So, I think for people who really care about this as we have this debate on health care, we need to make sure that we're actively calling our members of Congress and asking them to sponsor the bill, because if we can keep this momentum up, it will be a natural part of the conversation on health care, but we've got to keep that pressure up.
Charles in Southgate, California, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, Congressman Pocan, good morning.
Good morning, Charles.
I wanted to ask you about it's about renewable energy, and I've been hearing about this bill, S-987, the 5100 plan, and despite political obstacles, what are the possibilities of that becoming reality?
Yeah, well, I think you can't say despite political obstacles, right? Because the reality is, right now, the House of Representatives is run by this guy named Paul Ryan. The Senate's run by this guy named Mitch McConnell. And the White House has this occupant, former reality show star, Donald Trump. Given all of that, we're going to have an uphill battle on many things when it comes to the environment. We just went through a budget and appropriations process where the Environmental Protection Agency was dinged extremely heavily financially and is not going to be able to do a lot of the work that they did under the Obama administration. So I think we need our aspirational goals, and we need to make the points of why things like solar. I just put 8.5 kilowatts in our house last October. I love paying between $13 and $20 a month for my utility bill. Why all of those things make sense and why those things often create jobs here in the U.S., as opposed to sending all of our money overseas with things like oil. And I think we need to make all those cases, but pragmatically, politically, because that was your question, this is going to be a difficult time to see that happen, but doesn't mean you don't stop working on what you want to get to, and you need to make the case so that we can grow that. And then again, in 18, if people who won't change their ways, you can change their faces, those who represent you. But realistically, we right now are doing our best to stop deep cuts to environmental protection agencies in Congress.
Tom, in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hey, Congressman, this is Tom. I just wondered if you could address the SHIELD Act, which would harden our grid. I know it seems to be stalled, and I haven't heard much about it recently, and I'd just like to hear what your thoughts on it. Thank you.
Yeah, Tom, I'll be honest. I don't know a lot about it. I've been this week literally immersed till midnight and 11 p.m. several days, all day markups on appropriations. I don't know the status of it, and I just don't want to try to wing it because I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
Okay. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. You're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Good morning, Tom and Representative Pocan. Okay. Representative Pocan, I wanted to know who is in control of our Middle East policy, because what the news is Trump sent Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, who inherited his father's real estate business when his father went to federal prison. Is Jared Kushner actually in control of our Middle East policy? Thank you, sir.
Michael, great question. Questions that we ask on a regular basis. You would hope that it would be the professionals, right, within the Department of Defense and within intelligence and others who are helping provide that guidance. It does appear that the leading qualification to this White House is that you're the son-in-law of the president, therefore you're an expert on all things, including Middle East policy. So that should worry all of us. You know, the fact that we're not having a White House that listens to the professionals. I think from some of the actions we saw this White House take early on with some bombing in Syria to many, many other levels of activities, I don't know if I could say there is a coherent policy right now we're doing in the Middle East, and if it's really left to just the president's son-in-law, that will make it even less coherent. So, Michael, one of the big concerns we have as well in Washington.
Wow. Mark in Valley, Washington. Mark, you are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. This is back to that BDS bill, and I've not heard anybody talk about this. Let's say it did get passed. Wouldn't that set a precedent to where they can expand that to any type of protest?
Well, you're right, Mark. I mean, you know, if that's starting to be the path of how we do things, you could be any issue that they don't want, they could essentially criminalize speech on. And that is one of the concerns that many have. You know, let's just face it, this White House already is doing a lot of things in this Congress. I mean, just in the last week, while we were marking up our bills and appropriations, you know, they had a statement condemning UNESCO for something that they did in making Hebron a World Heritage Site. And, you know, they're taking on a lot of different little statements and kind of throwing them into bills that, again, aren't that coherent policy that Michael from California was just asking about. And if you start taking more and more measures, regardless of the subject, and making it harder to be able to speak out about it, you're taking away our constitutional rights, which is our highest level right we should have. So I think should those bills ever come to the floor, those will certainly be the debates. Again, I haven't heard many at all in Congress say that these are the priority bills that they're going to be moving. So generally I'm dealing with whatever I know is coming up, which right now will be budget and appropriation bills. Most in the next week, we'll start that with mini omnibus around defense, MILCON, and Homeland Security, which could include, by the way, funding for the wall, which we have to keep our eye on, Tom, for the next week in the House. In fact, it will likely include funding for the wall. And, you know, the other issues that are coming up around tax reform and some other things, I think that we'll see between July and September.
Rob, listening on Sirius XM in Mountain Iron, Minnesota. You're on the air with Congressman Polk.
Good day, Tom. Congressman, my question pertains to repeal and replace, where you just stated that many congressmen and many senators are multimillionaires. Isn't this a direct conflict of interest where the senators and congressmen get to be able to vote for this, and the whole thing is they're voting for themselves a tax cut, and they are voting at the same time to kill some of their constituents?
Rob, I wish I could disagree with you at some level, but what you're saying is unfortunately very accurate. I mean, you know, for many of them, this is a tax cut they'll be voting on for themselves and for many people that they know very well that fund their campaigns, and that for many people, this will be essentially a death sentence. If you don't have health insurance and you're sick, with a lot of the people who have these very serious ailments, you will die. So you said it succinctly, and the problem is, how do we make our House of Representatives and our Senate more representative of all of us? And you know, I think a lot's going to fall onto 2018, the fall of 2018, in doing that. But, you know, part of what excites me is when I see these candidates that are now looking at running who don't come from a place of wealth or privilege.
And welcome back. Congressman Pocan, my apologies for cutting you off there. Once the machine starts the music, it's out of my control.
No worries.
Great. Leslie, watching Free Speech TV in Central Square, New York. You are on the air with Congressman Mark Pocan.
Hi, Mr. Polkin. My name is Leslie Dean, and we have a big problem with the FCC. If the FCC was doing its job, you guys in the Democratic Party would be winning, okay? First of all, they ran Trump for 2 years straight, you might as well say, 24-7, 700 days, and a little bit of Hillary and very little Bernie, and that's wrong. There shouldn't be an FCC if they aren't going to do their job. It's supposed to be equal, you know. And they just, you guys, between Reagan and Clinton and Obama, destroyed the fairness doctrine. I mean, if you guys had the fairness doctrine in, you guys wouldn't be losing at all. But Obama didn't put it in. He had a chance to. He doesn't want to. Well, that tells me that the Democratic Party doesn't want truth coming out either. I mean, if you had a fairness doctrine, would it be no Rush Limbaugh, be no Hannity, be no...
Well, there would, Leslie. Actually, you know, just a point of fact, there still would be Limbaughs and Hannitys, and me, for that matter. It's just that station, what the FCC said was two things. Number one, if a station put out an editorial, and I worked in radio back in the 70s, I'm very familiar with this. If a station put out an editorial position, they had to provide space for the other side to rebut it, only if it was the voice of the station, number one. And number two, that stations, radio and television stations, had to do what's called programming in the public interest, which was interpreted to mean in a small way, things like local PSAs, you know, hey, there's going to be a bake sale at the school this week. But the bigger thing was actually providing real news. And that's why all the big networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, all of them lost money on their news operations until after the Telecommunications Act, or excuse me, until after the Fairness Doctrine was blown out of the water in 87, excuse me. And by the end of 87, all three networks, or maybe 88, all three networks had moved their news divisions under their entertainment divisions, and we were thrown into the world of infotainment. So with that, Leslie, thank you for the call. Congressman Pocan, your thoughts?
Yeah, Tom, thanks for explaining that. And I think, you know, what Leslie's saying is correct, right? I mean, with not having the Fairness Doctrine, has made it so that news doesn't get the same priority that right. it used to. And now we've got an administration that's trying to rewrite things to facts and alternative facts and fake news. And now they're trying to further destroy people having information and facts. Instead, you just have to go to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity to get your information. You're on the right, which, as we know, isn't really information. That's really that is the fake news that's out there. So Leslie's right. We should be doing everything we can to try to get back to a place where we had a fairness doctrine, where we had a balance of ideas that were out there and an emphasis on real news.
Yeah. In the meantime, what has happened is that, you know, right-wing wealthy people, you know, Rupert Murdoch, for example, and, you know, the owners of several radio networks have just bought up all these properties all over the country. Do you see any possibility that the Sherman Act will be reinforced with regard to media?
You know, again, with this Congress, I don't see those things happening, unfortunately. But, you know, there's a lot of reforms we need to do if we can take back our House of Representatives, our Senate, and our White House.
Amen. Welcome back. Congressman Mark Pocan taking your calls. Middays with Mark here on the Tom Hartman Program. Jeff in Sharpsburg, Georgia, listening on Sirius XM. You are on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Tom. Thank you, Congressman Pocan. I really appreciate you taking my call. I just had two quick questions. The first one is, they're both about the air traffic system. What are your thoughts on the privatization and if it's good or bad for the FAA system? And also, is Congress really aware of the staffing crisis that the air traffic control system is in right now? Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you. First of all, no, I don't support privatization. You know, most of the big airlines, although I may be wrong on this, I believe Delta may be the outlier on this, want this because, of course, they can figure out how to monetize it and make it so they can make even more profit if it goes that way. This is a public safety, a public good, and I think privatization would be a very bad idea. And on the staffing crisis, I know those of us who talk to the folks who work in those centers certainly know that, what's going on, and that we've got to make sure that we're addressing that as well. One other issue I'd mention, too, I think that we've got to deal with is this competition from these highly subsidized airlines from overseas trying to come in and get space, and that's going to hurt some of the folks who are working for the companies that we have here. So there's a number of fronts right now. We're waiting to see what exactly will happen under the Trump administration, but I think this effort to privatize would be counterproductive for consumers in the end.
Joe in Pompano Beach, Florida. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening to Sirius XM. You're on with Congressman Pocan.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen, and I won't be long. I just keep the issue was raised at different times that why can't, you know, healthcare insurance companies, rather, compete between different states throughout our whole country, i.e., I can buy insurance from, you know, Geico from California or throughout our whole country, as well as any other auto insurer for all of us, and yet right now, that doesn't even get addressed in any of the legislation being put forth. And to me, it seems like it would be better for competition and maybe help costs be lowered for people that really need it more so than others, say.
Yeah, Congressman, I'm confused by this. We had health insurance with, I don't want to name the company, but we had with them in Portland. Well, United Healthcare provided us with health insurance in Portland and here in D.C. We've also had it with Blue Cross Blue Shield, which I used to have back in Michigan. It seems to me like all these companies are selling their products in every state right now.
Yeah, so a couple things. One, the studies have shown that there's not a savings out of this. This is one of those talking points that we've seen put out there because it sounds like common sense, right? Why wouldn't you be able to buy outside your state lines? The problem is, some states have different requirements on the health insurance, and people could then just be buying the lowest possible common denominator of a health policy, and that doesn't necessarily solve the health insurance side, and we're being told it actually won't really solve the cost side either. So while it's one of those things I think that's easy to put out there and it sounds extremely reasonable, the reality is it doesn't provide cost savings and would reduce the level and quality of health care if it actually was opened up.
Right. And GEICO does tweak their car insurance policies from state to state to comply with state insurance commissioner policies. So even though they're selling nationwide, just like United Healthcare and Blue Cross and Aetna and everybody else, they do offer actually different plans from state to state.
I think ultimately, if people are looking for cost savings, you look at something like Medicare for All single payer, because you take away so many of the areas where money is wasted, from marketing to administration to profit and other areas.
Yeah, and that would be true across state lines. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, you are on with Congressman Pocan.
Good afternoon. I want to know if our representatives and our senators actually have stock in these health insurance companies. Is this the reason why we cannot have a public option or expand Medicare, because they're more concerned with their quarterly dividends?
Yeah, Norma, I'm sure a lot of people probably, if not direct purchase of stock, may have it through, you know, some consolidated plans that they're investing in. The thing is, though, I honestly don't think that is the biggest indicator. I just think the fact that so many insurance companies have so many lobbyists and put so much money into political campaigns, that's what gets the attention, right? I mean, people who fund your campaigns, when it's that kind of dollars and that kind of power through that, I think that's what's making people vote against their constituents. I don't think it's necessarily the stock side of things, from what I can tell in my conversations with people and from what I can see. So I think it has more to do with the political end of the work of some of the big insurance companies, and for that matter, Big Pharma and others as well.
Gary in Irvine, California, you're on the air with Congressman Pocan.
Hi, Congressman. I wanted to talk about the wall. You really don't need a wall. The problem is that they let these people come across and give them jobs. If you prosecute the companies that allow illegal aliens to come in and work, you know, if you stop that and you enforce that law, then I think that you really don't need a wall.
Yeah, but that would involve putting rich white employers in jail rather than poor people of color. Congressman?
Yeah, that's not nearly as much on talking point for the Republicans, is it?
No.
Gary, what you say is right. If we had actually the employers followed the law, that would solve much of the problem. I would argue, though, the whole premise that people are rushing across the border to come here isn't true and hasn't been true for quite some time. So we're dealing with a fallacy that, you know, really deals more with, for many, just their fear of people who have a different color of skin than anything else. So I don't even like to give them the fallacy that there's this bleeding somehow into the United States to do this. However, if you really wanted to address what they claim is the concern, Gary, you're right, you could have employers actually following the law, and that would take care of things.
Congressman, we have just in the neighborhood of a minute before the end of the hour. Your thoughts on the coming week and what we should be looking for, what we should be doing?
Yeah, so this is the last week before we leave for 5 weeks for the August recess. So things to look for, health care still on the Senate side. I think there'll still probably be some last-minute attempt possible. And then on the House side, you know, we're doing this first mini omnibus bill, which will have the wall funding and those issues, as well as potentially some sanction bills, and it's not clear yet what they could be. So this is an important week to watch for and call your member of Congress and your senator, because a lot of activity will happen because people are going to go home and they want to, you know, pound on their chest they did something, because let's face it, for the first 6 months of the year, we haven't done anything. So watch it. It's going to be an active, fast week, and we need to be vigilant to be on top of things to defeat really bad ideas.
Now, and the number for Congress, if you want to call your member of Congress, is 202-224-3121. And Congressman, a lot of people have been complaining that Republicans are simply not answering their phones right now. What do you do?
Send them an email, because still that gets in and gets counted as a contact.
Yeah.
So if they're playing that game and they just don't have enough people to answer the phones because more people are active and calling, send that email. If you send a letter, they may not get it for 3 weeks to Washington because it has to be screened for ricin and other things. Send an email.
Yeah. What about contacting local districts?
Contact the local district office. They'll keep contact. The contacts get counted there as well, and sometimes those phones are easier to get through.
That's great. Congressman Mark Pocan, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, congressman representing Wisconsin. Pocan.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Mark Pocan. Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Always great talking. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Congressman Keith Ellison, the deputy director of the DNC. He, as a congressman, he represents the 5th District of Minnesota. and does so brilliantly. His website, ellison.house.org, .house.gov, and in the capacity of the deputy director of the DNC, democrats.org, and you can tweet him at Keith Ellison. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Hey, man, great to be on with you. And, you know, you're just, I was listening to the show before and just doing some of that base level, you know, civic education, information, very important.
Thank you.
We don't do nearly enough of it.
Thank you.
We got to do a lot more.
Yeah, we do the best we can here. So there's, you know, a lot going on in Congress right now and in the world and in the Democratic Party. And I understand that you'd like to take some calls from listeners, that you're available for the whole half hour.
I am, and I would love to. I love talking to the folks, man, so let's do it.
Great. Okay. Before we get to that, I'm just wondering if there's any message that you want to share with folks or anything that, you know, your thoughts on what we need to be paying attention to right now politically, where the Democratic Party is at, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Let me just say that from a standpoint of winning elections, and I think that is a conversation that we all better pay a lot of attention to, because when we lose, we lose, right? So just think about the folks who are, you know, having to worry about losing their health care because of who won the last election. I just want to say that the real thing we got to focus on and that we need to do this summer, and we're doing it through Resistance Summer, is presence. What does that mean? That means that I don't care what message you come up with, you can come up with the best message in the world. If you don't get it to people's doorstep, to their ears, through the radio, through their, you know, through the phone, then it doesn't really matter. We have got to remember that, you know, making sure we got a strong message is part of that is means presence, means being in the room with folks, listening, hearing their feedback, and sharing some thoughts on how we all move forward. It's not just do a poll, come up with some a message or some magic words, and then good, we got it. No, that's not nearly good enough. You've got to then deliver it. And that's why, you know, I appreciate your show so much, because you're getting there, man. And
thank
that's
you.
Why, you know, we're pushing the this Democrats Live thing that we do, which is a live stream we do every Wednesday from the DNC. And that's why we're trying to push the message out all the time.
So the Democrats Live people could see over at democrats.org every Wednesday at what time?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock? Cool.
Yep.
Okay. All right. You want to pick up some phone calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go for it. Steve in Simi Valley, California. Steve, you are on the air with Congressman Keith Ellison.
Thank you, Congressman. Thank you, Tom. A question. I'm a FERS retiree, and I know that Donald Trump and the Republicans want to eliminate the FERS Social Security supplement. So I know they came out with their budget. I just want to know what the Congressman thought the chances are that they're going to eliminate that on this year's budget.
So let me answer that question as honestly and directly as I can. They'd like to eliminate it. And if we don't fight back, they probably will. I mean, the budget that they dropped, I mean, I've seen a lot of ugly, scary looking Republican budgets. I lived through Sequester, the Budget Control Act. We've seen all that nasty stuff. This is the single worst proposal I have ever seen from any Republican ever. And yeah, they're going straight at public employees. They're going straight at the FERS program. For people who don't know what that is, that is the federal retirement program that federal employees are in. And it's not unlike other, you know, retirement security programs that other folks work for. But this one is called FERS. You know, they got others. There's CalPERS in California. There's all kinds of different retirement savings programs people are in who work a lifetime. And they've earned that benefit. And yet, the Republican talking point is that it's too expensive, we can't afford it. Basically, they want to cut people's retirement security so that they can get a bigger tax cut to rich people so that they can use that money to buy off more politicians. That's kind of what their game plan has been and is. I can tell you this, likely compromise language will be, we'll leave the people alone who've already gotten into the program, but we're going to reduce new employees, you know, which is wrong too, right? So they're starting out really bad. Conventional wisdom says that they're going to make some kind of a compromise, but the compromise is going to be bad too. What about people worked a lifetime expecting to retire, right? Let's start there. And actually people don't have enough money to retire on. We should be talking about how to expand Social Security and retirement benefits. We should be trying to return to a program where you have a defined benefit program as opposed to just, you know, put your money on the stock market and hope for the best. So that's my best answer.
Amen. Well said. Todd, in Tacoma, Washington, you are on the air with Congressman Keith Ellison.
Hi, this is Todd from Tacoma, Washington. I was wondering about any legislation on the U.S. Postal Service privatization or five-day delivery, or like the FERS you were just talking about, it will affect the post office. So what legislation is out there for the U.S. Postal Service?
Let's talk Postal Service. Thank you for the question. Let me just say as a preliminary matter, the Postal Service is a venerated American institution which has gotten us the mail that we need for literally centuries, started by, Benjamin Franklin.
It was. He was our nation's first postmaster general, I believe.
Yeah, but you should also know that the post office has been hiring people of color since immediately after the Civil War, has hired more veterans, more women, and has been that place of employment that, people who have been working class folks and people from racial minorities and women could expect to get employed in and do meaningful and important work and advance themselves, put themselves into a middle class job. The post office is, I think, it's the biggest public employee union. I might be wrong, but if it's one of the biggest, for sure.
I believe you're right.
I think I am right about that. So that's just what I want to say off top. So some people want to attack it. Oh, by the way, the Postal Service is not a unit of government. It is a quasi-government corporation, and it has been up until a piece of legislation back in, I believe, 2006 was definitely in the black, and it would be in the black now if it were not for this ridiculous legislative mandate, which requires them to pre-fund health care and retirement benefits. Now let's talk health. Now let's talk post office. There are companies like Pitney Bowes and a few others that are trying to get that money. They want to take over it because they want to take all the profitable centers and then leave the rest, basically the last mile. That means that they want to fly it around and charge you $5 to send a letter, but they want to leave it so that the postal service can be left with the least profitable part of it. And basically, that's the last mile delivery. It's not true that the post office is failing because of the internet. In fact, because of online shopping, they've seen a boost in parcel delivery. That's important for people to know. But there have been proposals to go to 5-day. There have been proposals to have like these centralized boxes, which means they don't deliver to your door, but they deliver to some spot in your neighborhood. And there have been legislative proposals on all of that. There have been, I think that the Postal Service is as big a fight as any because, one, they want to crack that union. Two, they want to take out the profitable parts and leave the rest to wither. Three, they want to, they don't like the government. And the Postal Service is quasi-government still. They don't like the idea of the government doing good things for people because they want only private, they want to concentrate power in the hands of if corporations and individuals, not the public. So they're after the post office. All of us need to be clear as crystal about that and fight for it, defend it, and make sure we fight for it. So, yeah, there's plenty of proposals out there to cut the post office, 5-day, all kinds of stuff. We should resist it all. In fact, we should be allowing postal banking.
This.
And welcome back. Congressman, sorry to step on you there. Once that machine starts with the break music, I've got no control over it, and it shuts us down after about 10 or 15 seconds.
No, man, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, okay. So let's pick up some more phone calls here. Denny in Berwyn, Illinois, you're on the air with Congressman Keith Ellison.
Hi, Mr. Ellison. I'm really, really concerned about the bill for Israel, that we cannot protest against Israel. I have a real hard time with that because my family fought the Nazis in the Second World War. They actually stole our homes, and my father lost his hand, and they were fighting the Germans, the Nazis, with pitchforks. And, you know, I've talked to my dad, a couple of people about this, and, you know, this bill, and I'm going to use the word because it's the proper word. You can't hide from it. Throwing people in jail for 20 years, because in the United States, listen, if we're going to get rid of health care and do all this other stuff, I don't even recognize this country. But if you do that, that's as close to Nazism as you can get. And that's the proper word for this. It's not improper to use that word. And my father reminded me once a long time ago, Nazis aren't Germans. They could be anybody. It just depends what's going on and who's in power. And that's the problem. But to put a law like that, and I'm a veteran, to put a law like that, to even think about that law, to me, is a disgrace to this country, disgrace to the flag. And any Democrat that votes for this, I probably won't vote Democratic ever again, because this is this bill is a disgrace to freedom.
Okay.
That's what this bill is.
Congressman, are you familiar with the legislation he's talking about?
Yeah, I have been. I'm familiar with it. I'm still digging into it. I will tell you that it does raise some very scary First Amendment possibilities. And so, you know, definitely I think it's important to highlight that so that we can all focus our attention on it.
Yeah. I noticed there's some good Democrats who signed on to this thing. I'm guessing that a lot of people just, it's a nice Israel bill, let's go for it, not realizing that there was this attack on the First Amendment inside it.
Yeah, you know, I think that if people raise it up, talk about it, write about it, that it will give a heightened understanding to the critical First Amendment considerations there.
Yeah, and we all need to get on that. Let's see. We just have 1 minute, Congressman, before we're going to hit a break and rejoin our commercial stations. But, you know, we're still with our nonprofit stations and with Free Speech TV. In that minute, I'm curious your thoughts on the current state of affairs in the Middle East.
Right. Well, you know, 1 minute to talk about the Middle East.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm sorry.
let me just say this about the Middle East. The United States has historically taken a position on the Middle East, which is essentially transactional. You know, we supported people, supported us. We made sure that there was a free flow of oil. We supported any country that supported Israel, our ally there. And we, of course, were always ready to fight anybody who was ready to fight what they identified as terrorism. Sometimes it really is terrorism. Sometimes it's more questionable, like in the case of certain leaders like al-Sisi, I believe, calls certain people terrorists because he wants to marginalize them politically and not necessarily because they're engaged in that. So we need to develop a richer network, and we need to of connectivity with the Middle East as a whole. We need to have better relationships than simply with the Saudis. We need to expand friendships with and allyships beyond Israel.
There we go. Welcome back. Congressman Keith Ellison on the line with us, and Rich in Chicago listening on WCPT. You are on the air with Congressman Ellison.
Hey, Congressman and Tom, thank you so much for the show. I've been thinking about this for a little bit, and I wonder, when a congressman takes the oath of office to support the Constitution of the United States, you know, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide the common defense, and promote general welfare, I don't understand why health care isn't a part of that. How do we spend $1 trillion for the defense of America, you know, for all these weapons and stuff, but not the general well-being of the public? I don't know why Democrats don't scream this at the top of their lungs that they're sticking to their oath and protecting the people by having single payer or a health care system that provides health care for everybody, not just a few. Just like we do military protection. Where am I missing it?
Well, I think you're missing it because you don't give out those of us who fight for health care every single day any credit. That's where I think you're missing it. I think there's a general sense among some that always trashing what we're doing is the right thing to do. I mean, how can you say John Conyers and Barbara Lee and Bernie Sanders and even me and are not fighting for health care every single day? Of course we fight for it because it's part of the general welfare. We do it all the time. The real problem is that I talk to folks who say, how come nobody's saying anything about XYZ? And it's not true. We are saying it. I'm saying it now. I believe that it is a right to have health care access and go to a doctor when you're sick. That's why for the last 10 years I've been on John Conyers' single health, single payer bill. I mean, but I got to tell you, I agree with you, but the problem is that there, among so many people, there is just this reflexive need to say the Democrats aren't doing this and not doing that when we're clearly doing it. Yeah. Now, we might not be doing it well enough for you. In that case, listen to Tom Hartman, and when you say, when we say something that you think is right, be able to say, yeah, I actually heard Keith Ellison say that he believes health care is a right. He said that he believes that that right can be found in the preamble to the Constitution about promoting the general welfare. Tell somebody the good news that we're actually on your side, as opposed to say, ah, they never for anything. I mean, it's just not true. And it's incredibly frustrating when we can't get our own folks to even see that we're for them.
Yeah. Part of it is the media, though. I mean, it's like, you know, it's all Trump all the time or all this or that.
No, that's true.
And they very rarely, you know, if a Republican, you know, for example, Al Gore just came out in favor of single payer. And right. if a former Republican vice president and presidential candidate had come out in favor or against any part of the Republican health care bill, it would have been national news. But right. when a Democrat says it, the media just ignores it.
They're just like, oh, did that happen? Oh,
yeah, no. Right.
So I find that interesting. So, I mean, I think that I just want to say to the caller, look, man, I definitely feel you. You know, you're not seeing and hearing enough from us. That's why I'm talking today. That's why we're doing Democrats Live. That's why we are working day and night, because there is a growing awareness that you can't just take the right position. You have got to make sure that people know what position you're taking. And that is as important as taking the position that really promotes what I believe is a constitutional right to be able to seek and get quality and affordable health care. So
amen.
That's the deal. But we need to work together on this stuff. It needs to be a partnership. And in the day of social media, you can tweet out that the Democrats support, you know, $15 minimum wage, support universal health care. Gore came out for single payer. You can help us get that message out, and we need you to.
Okay. Mark in San Francisco, we're down to 90 seconds here before the before Congressman Ellison has to go and we hit a hard break. So, Mark, a real quick question for the congressman.
Well, gentlemen, basically, I think the Democratic message should be there's millions of jobs already in the United States with infrastructure and green energy, and to tie the infrastructure with putting like solar panels on buildings, putting turbines on bridges, and really push for a jobs program with green energy and infrastructure. I think that's the message that would really carry well in this country.
Congressman?
I agree. Good idea. And I think a whole lot of folks agree with you. Let's trumpet that to the four corners of the universe so that the world knows the Democrats are about putting people to work and improving our infrastructure and can do both.
How is it that, you know, in the 45 seconds we have left here, how is it that Trump can say that he campaigned on a $1 trillion infrastructure bill, and now he's talking about, you know, privatizing our infrastructure? It's like whipsaw.
Well,
whiplash,
you know,
excuse me.
He said he was going to health care. He could get health care to everybody and it was going to be cheaper. That's not true.
Right.
He said he was going to, you know, I mean, he said a lot of things that he's already reneged on. I mean, this guy is wants to cut Medicaid to folks who need it desperately. I mean, I think that we got to just, I mean, it's hard to admit that you just got lied to and fooled. And but he did fool people. It's not their fault. He told them something that wasn't true.
Yeah.
And so now it's time to just fess up and deal with that. And I think that a real infrastructure bill is what we need, just like the caller said.
Congressman Keith Ellison, you're doing great, great, great work as deputy director of the DNC and representing Minnesota and everything else you're doing. Thanks so much for being with us today, sir.
Thank you, sir. Take care. We'll see you next week, maybe.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us, live from the American Federation of Teachers Radio Row, is Kwame Alexander. Kwame Alexander is the author of more than 24 books, including The Crossover, a poet, educator, and co-founder of Leap for Ghana, an international literacy program. The website is kwamealexander.com. You can tweet at KWAME Alexander, at Kwame Alexander. Kwame, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So tell us about your program, the Leap for Ghana program.
So I'm building a library in Ghana, in West Africa. I've been going to Ghana for 5 years. I went initially to participate in a ceremony where a friend of mine was becoming the queen of a village. And it was really miraculous and marvelous. And they asked me to read to the kids in the school. And I read to 200 kids from my book. It's a picture book called Acoustic Rooster and His Barnyard Band. It's about a rooster that starts a jazz band with Duck Ellington and Miles Davis.
I love it.
And so I read to these kids in this makeshift classroom with no walls, no ceiling. And after I read, while I was reading, a rooster walked up beside me, which was the funniest thing ever. And then I asked for more books, and they brought a book. And I said, where are your other books? Where's your library? And they had 200 kids, 11 classrooms, 11 teachers, and one book in the entire school.
Wow.
And I decided in that moment I was going to do something to just help, to offer some, you know, some assistance in helping them get more books, train teachers in literacy, provide scholarships for kids to go to high school, and build a library. So I'm really excited that we're going back on Monday. We cut the ribbon after 5 years on our library in the eastern region of Ghana.
That is great. I know when President Obama went to Ghana, Radio Bulisa I believe Bulisa is the capital city.
Accra.
Accra, that's right, Accra is. But anyway, the town of Bulisa has a radio station, and they wanted to pick up a radio show, and they picked up our show and carried it for a couple of years. I don't know if they still are or not, but we were on the air in Ghana for
That's great.
For some time. Yeah, so how can people find out more about what you're doing, and how can people help out?
You can go to KwameAlexander.com to find out sort of more stuff on what's going on with me and the writing and the books. And you can go to Leap for Ghana, L-E-A-P as in Paul, F-O-R, Ghana, G-H-A-N-A.com or .org. And you can find out more information about the work we're doing with the library, and also donate, whether you want to donate books or cash. Cash is always great.
Yeah, that's absolutely marvelous. Right. And what else are you up to right now?
Writing books, man. Writing novels for kids, trying to inspire kids, trying to entertain and empower kids, traveling to schools and conferences and speaking about my love of literature, and taking my kid to basketball and tennis camp every day.
Yeah, that's great. That is wonderful. KwameAlexander.com is the website, and also leapforghana.org, you said?
Right. You got it.
Okay. And you can tweet him at Kwame Alexander. Kwame, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's been great talking with you. I do appreciate it. Also on the line with us right now is Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers. AFT.org is the website. President Weingarten, welcome back to the program. It's been too long.
I know, Tom. I mean, first off, you've just been too busy fighting all the fights and making sure that there is some accurate reporting about what's going on in Crazy Town here.
Yeah, we are doing our best. We are absolutely doing our best. And we just had Kwame Alexander on from the AFT radio row. How's everything going with the American Federation of Teachers?
Well, look, you know, this is what's so unbelievable right now. We have in Washington, despite the heat, you know, 1,400 educators from around the country who often come on their own dime to actually be in a conference to hone in their craft. And to do and to learn new strategies to actually help kids, individual kids, get a good education. That is who public school teachers are, and that is who our union is. We spend the money, we devote the resources to doing this, this kind of professional development. And meanwhile, when we're here doing this and fighting against the budget cuts that DeVos and Trump have put in, to eliminate all summer school programs, all after-school programs, all lowering of class size, all professional development programs. We're here doing that and fighting those budget cuts. Meanwhile, Betsy DeVos is meeting with the corporate lobbyists, the billionaires, the privateers who want to privatize education. And she takes us on as opposed to helping us help school children. And frankly, she wants to do this as a private citizen, as a gazillionaire, a billionaire. You know, the First Amendment allows people to do whatever they want to do. But how dare she do this
as a sworn, as a person who's taken an oath of office to protect and defend and help all children. How dare she do the things she is doing to undermine, destabilize, and defund public education, which is the only system of education that has been there for the children, for all of the children in the United States of America.
Yeah, I think when Reagan put Bill Bennett in charge of the Education Department, which in itself was kind of a debacle. I mean, Bennett had campaigned when he ran for president in, I think it was 76, on ending the Department of Education.
Right.
I mean, it's just like Betsy DeVos. It's like, but Bennett didn't do anything close to the damage that Betsy DeVos is doing. This is strategic.
Exactly.
This is well-funded. It's in every state.
What
are you doing? What is the AFT doing, the American Federation of Teachers and other teachers unions, doing to fight back against this? And what can we do? What can I do? What can our listeners do to support your efforts and to stand up for our public schools?
Fantastic. So there's four things that you can do, and I really appreciate the question. Number one is to know what the truth is, that we resist injustice and we fight injustice as we have the AFT for the 100 years of our history. You know, we're not perfect, but that is what we do. And number two is that we reclaim the promise of public education, meaning we fight for the things that we think will work to help all kids learn. And so what we are doing right now is we are fighting against the federal budget cuts that go against schools. And in state after state, we've been fighting that as well. So when, you know, our teachers and parents go into communities around the country, and when we go in and ask for communities help, we need that help. We know that parents are with us. We know communities are with us. Three-quarters, a recent poll we just took said three-quarters of the people polled are opposed to the DeVos Trump budget cuts, and they're also opposed to these kind of defunding of public schools in order to give them to charters and vouchers. So right now, as we're speaking, people can go to their federally elected officials, senators or congresspeople, and say, please vote no for the DeVos Trump budget cuts to education that will directly hurt kids. That's number one. Number two, help us when we are helping, when we're doing home visits to parents in schools. Help us when we are fighting to make every public school a place where parents want to send their kids and educators want to work and kids are engaged.
Seems like some solid stuff. What is your prognosis for the future? What are the trend lines right now?
Look, at the end of the day, people are, you know, what we're seeing is that people are really supporting public schools. And when it comes to, just like in healthcare, when it comes to the DeVos agenda in public schools, they are the DeVos agenda to eliminate public schools. Because I agree with you, not Reagan, Bush, no Republican president has ever actually actively tried to destabilize and defund public schools at the same exact time as they were promoting other alternatives. Some of them promoted other alternatives, but they also thought that public schools were important. This is the first time we have somebody who's actively trying to end public schools as we know them. So what's happening is that people are rising up and people want their public schools. They want them to be, you know, the ones that don't work, they want them to be better, but they want their public schools. So I think if we continue this fight and continue to resist injustice and have a path forward that people support us on, I think that we will prevail. But there's a very, very important event in between these days of 17 and 18, which is the November 2018 elections. If people vote for people who believe in public education, believe in having a good economy that works for all, then we will, then our prognosis will be good.
Amen. Okay, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT.org. You can tweet her at @rweingarten. President Weingarten, thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom. Really
great talking.
Appreciate it.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information from Wall Street and Main Street, all points in between.
Plus, the best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, show up, participate, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Been listening to Tom Hartmann. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartmann.com.